The amazing thing about this is still better than drinking. Okay, our main speaker tonight is Brian.
I'm Brian Little, I'm an alcoholic. Don't worry, we're all nervous up here. My sobriety date is April 23rd, 1989, and that's through God's grace. Better? I thought I was loud enough. Thank you, Morgan, for asking me to speak. You know, in AA, when they ask you to do something, you do it. It doesn't matter if you like it or not. And I'm not a big fan of speaking, but what I do is I do a little prayer and I ask God to help me out, and I do it because it's given me a great life today. A little bit of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Average family, grew up in California, parents worked, oldest of three, and my whole life I felt different. Couldn't point it out, just felt different. You know, I have the last name a little. All the way through high school, I was 5'2", 90 pounds, hair parted down the side with a lazy eye, so I was one of the geeks. I got thrown in dumpsters, all that. But the whole thing was, my mom would always say, I'd say, what's wrong? And she'd say, I love you, everything's going to be okay. But it didn't matter. Even though they said they loved me and they made sure I had food and a house and went to school, I still felt different. So, and growing up, I would dress like the jocks. I would dress like the geeks. I would try to fit in and see what it is. Just felt different. Couldn't figure it out. My dad drank, but he went to work every day. And my mom took care of us and she worked. So it was none of the family stuff. They didn't sit down and explain sex education to you. They set you in front of the TV, the PBS station, and said, here, watch. And I was like, that's what it was. Or, I had never thought I got enough attention from my folks. If I look, now being in sobriety, I had a great family compared to a lot of stories I've heard. And did fine at school, high school, and I think it was, didn't touch a drink. And when I say drink, that means everything. I just try to respect the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. So at 17, a neighbor came over, and my dad had an old TV set gutted out, and he made it into a bar. And the neighbor said, let's have a drink. I said, okay, sounds good. And I wanted to be liked from everybody. And I had my first drink was vodka and grapefruit juice. I took that sip, and it was perfect. I can still remember it to this day. When it hit my stomach, I was 6 foot tall, I was good looking, and the world was great. So from the beginning, I'm an alcoholic. I started getting in trouble. Right after that, I started drinking. Never socially, to get drunk. I liked what it made, how it made me feel. It felt anything but me. And, for graduation for high school, I could have had a lot of things, but you know what I wanted? I wanted a case of Low and Brow dark beer so I could drink with my dad in the garage to feel a part of. I could have got a car, I could have got college paid for, but no, I want a case of booze. Talk about insanity. So things were going downhill very quickly, and my father didn't tolerate that, so I threatened my mother like a few months before graduation high school, and my dad pretty much knocked me through the bedroom door, and he said, you'll never treat your mother that way. He said, get out or join the military. I thought, I'll join the military, But I'll go back a little bit. It was always about how I felt. I'm on the water polo swim team, 5'2", 90 pounds, wearing a Speedo. Can you picture that? And not hitting puberty, I always felt different than everybody else. And what happened, that booze just took the edge off. Made me feel, I'm okay, I can survive. So what happened is I'd screwed up enough in high school, I still graduated, but it was enough to get into the military, the Army. I was either going to be a cook or a tanker, armor tanks. I definitely wasn't cooking. So I went in, and I was from California, so I didn't know what humidity was. So in July, I was flown to Fort Knox, Kentucky. I got off that plane, and I wanted to cry. I wanted to get back in that plane and go back home. It was awful. And, you know, right then you have drill sergeants that say, come on, let's go. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the structure and the discipline, like Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did well. But what happened is they sent all the single men over to Germany and all the married men to North Korea, which is considered a hardship, or they can't bring their spouses. So I went to Germany. And they taught me how to drink. Boy, I will tell you. And what happened, for whatever reason, I got in with roommates with a couple of gentlemen who were already there. They showed me how to party. They took me in and took care of me. And, you know, the military, they want you to drink. They want you to stay there, drink, have a great time. So I did. And for the most part, I did pretty good. But towards, you know, this alcoholism, they talk about it, that progressiveness. I signed up for 2 years. 52 days before I was supposed to get out, they let me go because of my alcoholism. What the CEO said is, I can't catch you doing all these things, but I'll get you. You know, because I'd get away with everything. And so 52 days before I got out, still honorable discharge. I look back at that, and it was like, what a great opportunity I blew because of alcoholism. Remember, booze is more important than family, friends. I gave everything away for booze. I didn't care about you. I didn't care about... I had great jobs. I didn't care about any of that. I cared about drinking because it took the edge off. I felt a part of it. And I come home from the military ashamed, of course, because I'd gotten kicked out. And my parents were razzing me, get a job, be responsible. So I went back to Europe and lived there and traveled Europe. And I partied. Of course, there was this girl that I went back to. And she says, I said, what can I do since you're letting me stay here? She said, let's get married. I said, okay, fine. I knew I had a place to stay and I could drink. Her father happened to be the chief of police of this town, so we could get away with murder. So my at that time, my brother-in-law, he liked to do lots of stuff. So he would take me all the time, and we would travel Europe and party. You know, I had some great, great opportunities, and a lot of them were in blackouts. I'd wake up in one country, pass out, wake up in another country. And they'd say, boy, did you have a great time? It's like, oh, yeah, sure. Where's the next drink? And what happened, because of my booze, I gave away the job. You know, everything was booze. I gave away everything. You know, I didn't show up to work. I'd steal money. Do all that stuff. So I ended up being forced to come back to the United States. And then, of course, Mom and Dad said, get a job. So I did for a while. And then my best friend I grew up with, he said, why don't you come out to Vegas? I've got a job for you. I said, great, gets me out of the house. So I get to Vegas, and I worked. I got a job right away as Kmart. I was happy as can be, as long as I could drink. Living in the worst part of North Las Vegas, where all the Bloods and Crips and criminals, but I could drink. What happened is I applied to an ad to care for somebody's garden out in the desert. That makes a lot of sense. And what happened is I interviewed for the State of Nevada Film Commission, and I got a job working for the state, for all commercials and movies that came in the state of Nevada, I got to help set up. I'm about 22 at this time. So back then, 87, they're giving me $30,000 a year. They're giving me a 5-liter Mustang convertible, and they're saying, just go work. And all these people that come to Vegas in the film industry drink. They do a lot of drinking, so I would take them everywhere, to all the clubs, all the resorts, everything. A great job. I'd do great the first, you know, year, year and a half, but what happens is that booze catches up. Next thing you know, I'm not showing up to work, I'm padding the till, I'm stealing money, I'm not showing up to events, and then they let me go because of booze. But it was great, you know. I always see God's watching out for me even when I'm screwing up. I really believe that today because you'll hear my story. I ended up giving away that job, that nice job, and I became a plumber using a jackhammer out in the desert doing swimming pools. That's pretty harsh on an alcoholic. You know, you really sweat that stuff out. And what happened is I gave everything away, so I kept drinking, and I've been blacking out now for a while. I'd go with a full paycheck, I'd wake up the next day and have no money left. Couldn't understand how. So things are getting bad, and of course I'm committing a few felonies. Writing bad checks, stealing credit cards, doing everything for to support my alcoholism. And it got to a point where I can still remember this apartment on Viking Street in Vegas. That I woke up one day, and I just, no special day, went into the bathroom and I said, God, please help me. And I don't know, I had the white light experience. For a moment, I just knew everything was going to be okay. I didn't know how, but I knew it was going to be okay. So, of course, I'm still drinking a little bit here. And then, you know, next couple weeks, they're taking out the rent of furniture. They're repossessing the vehicle. And so I go to a hotel. I can remember the hotel, the Thunderbird Hotel in Vegas. And I get put up by my old boss for like 3 or 4 weeks. And, of course, I work, I gamble, I drink it away. Comes time where I got to get kicked out of the hotel. I have no money. I look at my wallet, and I have my old boss's truck key. So what a better idea than to steal my boss's truck. The guy that's been so good to me, I just needed to get out of Vegas. So I stole that truck, and this is how God works. I get in that truck, start it up, it's full tank of gas. I go from Vegas all the way to California. And on the way, I'm thinking of robbing a 7-Eleven. And for some reason, I get diverted to my cousin's house in Hesperia, which is about, it's almost 400 miles. I don't know how the truck made it. I had no money. Pull in his driveway, and I come in to him, and I said, I'm in trouble. And he goes, what do you want to do about it? I didn't know at this time my cousin was 6 years sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, I need help. I'm in a lot of trouble. He says, let me call your dad. Excuse me. Well, my dad and him were very close because he'd helped him get sober. And my dad said, come on home. So I got on a bus. And first thing, after that, my cousin said, you're an angry son of a bitch. And I was. I thought life treated me shitty. I didn't realize it was the booze. I thought I just got caught. I got caught lying. I got caught stealing. I got caught everything. And I get home, and my mom and dad said, you need to do the right thing. Well, I'd committed all those felonies and other things in the state of Nevada. So my dad said, what are you going to do? I said, I guess I'm going to turn myself in. Well, when you steal a truck, it's back then it was Grand Theft Auto. That was 15 years. So I do all the crying with the family, say goodbye. My sister takes me to the local jail. I turn myself in. I can still remember this. I give him my license under that plate glass. It seemed like eternity. It's probably maybe 2 hours. The officer behind him pushed the license back and he says, I guess you got a second chance in life. Well, in the background, also, my mom had worked with a lady who at the time was 10 years sober. So she was telling her that I needed to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. She's still sober to this day. So when I came home from jail, my parents were all surprised, like, what are you doing here? You know, they'd give me the toothbrush and everything. The guy said, I don't have anything on me. And she says, will you go to Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, yes. See, so I had those spiritual experiences before getting to the rooms. So I was directed to my first meeting, the 1600 Club in Santa Maria, California. And I go up to the front door, and this is what I love about this group, is you have greeters. There's a gentleman who was homeless. I can remember, played the accordion on the streets, had a big, fat, short tie, real cheap suit, and he took my hand and he said, welcome home. From that moment on, the gears inside clicked. I knew this was where I belonged. So I get in the rooms, and I get appointed a sponsor. Back then, they didn't ask you what you wanted to do. They told you what you wanted to do. You know, and I started following directions. my sponsor said he would call me up at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, be outside in 15 minutes, we're on a 12-step call. I didn't have a chance to say no. You know, or, you know, I'm all hip, slick, and cool. My life sucks. But, you know, I'm in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm thinking it's great. And I'd start, you know, raise my hand and an old timer across the room and say, shut up, boy, you don't know what you're talking about. I thank God for men like that. Because they told me the truth. Arrogant, selfish SOB that I was. I still am these days, but it's much, much better. So what happened? He says, if you're willing to do the work, this is what we're going to do. So we got right on the steps. And, you know, I spent 7 years drinking. And as of next Thursday, if I keep doing what I'm doing, it'll be 20 years of sobriety. And that's a gift. Because I should be in prison for the things that I did. You know, 3/4 of it I didn't get caught for. So to me, that's God's grace. You know, I like it. If you ask the guys I sponsor, I'm not very kind with them. I tell them the truth. But you know what? The men that told me the truth saved my life. You know, my life is so great. How come I ended up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, normal people, normal drinkers don't say, I have nothing better to do. I'm going to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Normal drinkers don't think that. My mom will have a glass of wine, drink half of it, and set it down. My brain goes, why are you wasting wine? And I don't like to drink wine. That's my thinking. You know, it's amazing. If you're new, and I saw those people, and April is a great month to have a birthday. Yes, it is. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I thought life was just shitty to me. You know, and then it was pointed out through my sponsor. Everything that I did when I got in trouble, even when I didn't get in trouble, had to do with alcohol.
Perfect.
Even if it was just a sip here and there, it always led up to something. Admitted we were powerless over alcohol. That means for me today that after I take that first drink, I don't know what's going to happen. At the end, I blacked out all the time. Got my ass beat, got robbed, because I was just a drunk. You know, and then our lives had become unmanageable. I didn't understand that. You know, I thought it was, oh, I didn't pay the bills, I didn't, you know, go to work, all this. You know, my sponsor pointed out that the unmanageability was from within. I had no spiritual way of life. I was dead inside. And alcohol just stayed that off just to live. You know, and I love this part. This one, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That's taught me that when I got here, I'm insane. I know, still to this day, I can be insane. You know, I always tell everybody, welcome to the nut ward at our home group. Because we're all nuts, just not on the same day. You know, and I don't have to take my mind personally today. When my mind's out to get me, I can either say, God, please remove this, or I can obsess about it and think about it and have a shitty day. But it's amazing. When I do ask God for help, He takes it away. And if I'm worried about a situation, I truly trust God. He takes care of it, and He always takes care of it better than I could have imagined. You know, and some days I'm just plain nutty. But what I do is I go to meetings, call my sponsor, call other men, be of service. And maybe just a little bit, I'm not thinking that much about me. Step 3, came to believe that power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. My sponsor said, all that is saying you're willing to do the rest of the steps. You know, to this day, I don't understand God, but I know He works. You don't have to. If you want to do that for a business degree, law degree, or a hobby, great. But you don't have to understand Him. He works. Plain and simple. No ands, ifs, or buts. You're all here today, right? Sober? So, He works. And this is the one that everybody gets likes to get stuck on and scared to death of. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. I got to that. I did 4-step. I did all 4 columns. Did my part. But then I met her in the rooms. So what did I do with that 4-step? I put it in a dresser drawer for, I don't know, I think a month. You know, it says, with all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. It doesn't say do a step a year. It doesn't, you know, none of this mumbo-jumbo stuff. What the book says, because an alcoholic that does not have alcohol is insane. So you got to have another solution, which is the steps. So, you know, I did all those things on that. I did the fourth column, you know, my part, all that. But, you know, I was with her, so everything was okay. Pink cloud. Well, then one day, she decided to read my four step. So I called my sponsor up. She read my four step! He said, good, are you ready? That next day, I was there doing my fifth step with him. You know, so God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our odds. My whole life I've been carrying this load of shame, guilt, remorse, you name it. So my sponsor, double-digit sobriety, he's got his hands crossed like that, he said, go ahead. So I told him all the stuff I was going to the grave with. His face didn't change. His expressions didn't change. He said, go on. Well, I just told him the shit I was going to the grave with. That's, hey, you need an announcement for that. You know, this is what I'm thinking in my head. Don't you know I've been holding this for a long time? He goes, go on with it. So we get through the whole thing. He goes, that's it? I go, what do you mean that's it? He goes, is that everything? I go, yeah. He goes, okay. That was it. Nothing spectacular. And then what he had me do was follow the directions, put the book down for an hour, review the first five proposals, and then do step six and seven. But the neat thing was about that is I was carrying this awful stuff all my life. I felt free after doing that fifth step. You know, a lot of people stay with the pastor or a friend or whatever. I like doing it with an alcoholic because you can't bullshit an alcoholic. And you know what? If I skip on this step, I might not overcome drinking. And I've seen a lot of people that have carried those certain secrets, that have drank, that have blown their brains out, died because of that one little secret. You know, we all have done it in one form or another. It's got a name. We've all done it. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. All that's saying is, okay, God, I need your help. Instead of saying, I can do it. And you know, the most glaring ones went away. I still got lots of character defects. And only God removes them at his time, not my time. I can say, oh, I'm working on my character defects. I'm not working on my character defects. I'm acting on them. You know, I'm being a liar, a cheat, a thief. I'm being dishonest. So I either continue to do that or I ask God to remove it. You know, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter. Seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Same thing. Hey, God, help me out. I'm a selfish SOB. I need a little help today. And this is my favorite step here. Step nine. Cut the fourth step and fifth step were hard. This is the hard step. You make it through this, you get those promises, those ninth step promises. Make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Where do you get that list? Oh, I'm sorry, go back to eight. Made a list of all persons who became willing to make amends to all, and then nine. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. For ninth step, where do you get that? You know, the eighth step, you get that from your fourth step. And the ninth step, just go right down it. So I went and I made direct amends to all those people that were on the list. And I became willing for the people that I couldn't get a hold of. I owed $40,000 when I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because of my actions. It took me 7 years to pay off all those debts. But you know what? I paid them all off. My mom was in banking for a lot of the years of her life, and she said, you stole from those people, you'll pay them back. Oh, Mom, it's a credit card, it's a big corporation. My mom would say, your father and I own stock in some of those corporations. You're stealing from us. You know? And then I just go a little bit, you know, when we first get here, it's like, God, we feel so great. Pink cloud, kumbaya, all that great stuff. We haven't even done the action yet. We just stopped drinking. You know, so I know it all. So I tell my dad, you know, my dad's been drinking all his life. I say, hey, Dad, 6 months sober. A few months sober. I say, hey, Dad, you need this book. He goes, I don't need nothing. Mind your own business. See how this works is by continuing the steps. Is 6 months after I was sober, my dad has stopped drinking and hasn't touched a drink since. So, you know, I don't have the answers. My parents didn't trust me in their house for 4 years until I was 4 years sober. You know, but I had to earn that back. Great thing about the ninth step also is very, very judgmental. All you sons of bitches. But what happened is those people I caused great, great harm to, all they said is, we want you to get better, Brian. Get on with your life. So people that I did shitty things to could say that to me. Who's for me to judge? And out of everybody, they wish me happiness. One person says, if I see you, I'll kill you. But I'm still here today. So God is working. But I had to be willing to go up. So if you're afraid of the ninth step, if you take God with you, works out pretty good. And like I said, you know, some guy still wants to kill me if he sees me, but that hasn't happened yet. So I know God's taking care of me. 10, 11, and 12. So 10, continued to take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I got to do that every day. No, every night. All right, I screwed up here, I screwed up there, I screwed up here. Please help me out, God, for to be a better person the next day. You know, don't drink no matter what. That's the whole thing. Don't drink no matter what. The other stuff takes time. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. I'm not a big meditator. I talk to God in the morning, hey God, please keep me sober, thy will be done. I go about my business, talk to God through the day. At the end of the day, thank you God, where have I been wrong? Let me do better. It's for each individual. You know, if you want to do the mantra or you want to do all that other stuff, more power to you. But it's of your understanding. You know, when I grew up, God was going to fry me for all the thoughts and things I did. That's what I thought. And today I got a great God. And if you still think bad thoughts about God, get your sponsor's God. Get somebody else's God. You know, and get something way bigger than you could ever think of. You know, a doorknob doesn't work. A group of drunks works in the beginning. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. It says, having had a spiritual awakening. If you do these 12 steps or this experiment, you will have a spiritual awakening. Now I'll contact you, I just don't know when. That's between you and Him. And I did all this stuff, and I have to continue. I still, to this day, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I still go to 4 meetings a week, 5 meetings a week if I'm not too busy with work. I'm still working with guys. I'm still doing service work. I say yes to commitments. You know, it's great. I was able to bring the guys down from Orlando. We went and had dinner at Channelside, and then we came here. You know, my old life, I'd be robbing, stealing, cheating, and drinking, and being miserable. And time takes time. So if you're new, you got to earn it. You got to work at this. You know, I caused all that chaos in a long, long time, so it takes time to get sober. You know, they say 5 years walking around since. Well, I think for me it's like 10 or 15 years for walking around since. But I understand what they're talking about now, that emotional sobriety. My favorite part in the book, bless you. My favorite part in the book right now is our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and the people about us. And I try to do that today. Not just in Alcoholics Anonymous, but like with my employer. I've been with the same company for 11 years. They trust me with a corporate credit card. They trust me with a company van with $1 million worth of equipment.
but they only knew who I was.
AA, all the dream, you know, a gentleman named Bill Oakley is not around anymore. He used to say, bring your drunken dreams and your sober dreams to Alcoholics Anonymous. And they will come true. All I wanted was a peace of mind. And I got so much more. Alcoholics Anonymous allowed me to go to college and earn several degrees. Never thought I'd be able to do that. Alcoholics Anonymous allowed me to get married in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Never thought it was going to happen. Because when I grew up as a kid, I thought I'd love to be married, have a nice house, and enjoy life. I got those things today because of Alcoholics Anonymous and doing the action. And not saying life doesn't suck. Sometimes there's some tough times here, but if you don't drink, you get through it. I have not seen my... If you were here 2 weeks ago, 4 Christmases ago, my wife's brother was murdered by her stepson in a drunken brawl. You know, and she went to meetings, she shared that. And the first thing I thought is, God, how can I be of service? So while my wife and her sister went up to clean the house, that was awful whorehouse, terrible shape, I was able to babysit my nephew, who was 3 at the time. I was able to hang out with my wife's parents, make sure they were fed and taken care of. That's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Suit up and show up. Because 99% of the time I think about me. What happens? You people taught me to think about you. And, you know, this is amazing. I was telling our home group members how great your home group is and how many members you have. To me, that's phenomenal to see so many young people in Alcoholics Anonymous so involved. If you're new, try this experiment. I've always made bets with the guys I work with. If you do this experiment and nothing changes, I'll give you $1 million or a bottle of booze. I haven't had to pay $1 million or a bottle of booze yet. It truly works. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Brian. Let's give him another round of applause. Okay. I've asked, hopefully, Heidi to read Dr. Bob's last message.
Hi, my name is Heidi and I'm an alcoholic. Okay, Dr. Bob's last message. It says, delivered at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick to it infinite. Yeah. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength has not returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. Mine will too. But there are 2 or 3 things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it all up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand that love is, and we understand that what service is. So let's bear those things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member, the tongue. And if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing, none of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.